It'll be first and 25.
This is the season finale of First and 25, the 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating from the Football Zebras crew. And this week, Super Bowl 60 is in the books, and we have Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Seubert, Pat Weber, and I'm Ben Ostro. So let's jump right in, and we'll take a few quick observations of the 2025 season from the crew. And I'm looking at everybody, and I'm always doing this random. Everybody's tensing up. Like, who's going to go first? We'll throw it to Chris to start it off.
I don't know if my topic is that exciting, but I think it was a big sort of adjustment to a rule change that kicked in 2 years ago with the dynamic kickoff. The first year was kind of a flop because most of the special teams coaches decided just to kick it into the end zone and get a touchback. And that time it was at the 30-yard line. This year they made a slight adjustment where touchbacks were moved out to the 35, and it seemed to make a big difference, not only noticeably when watching games, but also if you look at the data. So in 2024, 32.8% of the kicks were returned. In 2025, that number went up to 74.5% where the kickoffs were returned. So clearly they decided that extra 5 yards was significant enough where they wanted to kick it and have the returns. And I think that's interesting. I think that's what the NFL definitely wanted. They did see an uptick in concussions compared to last year just because there were so few returns. But it's still much below of what I guess you would call the traditional kickoff and the injuries that came from that. I think the interesting thing will be to see if this trickles down to college at some point now that the NFL, I think, has kind of found the sweet spot going forward. I don't know if they'll ever make it to high school, but certainly at the college level, I think they could consider it if they're going to continue on sort of their quest for player safety and reducing sort of concussions. So that was an interesting stat I saw for the year. And I think it was definitely observed from all the fans out there as well.
And one of the reasons we saw this come forth is you have a touchback and a concussion on the same play. So this sort of obviated the need to have any kind of contact when there is not going to be any return, but then there were fewer returns. And so, yeah, I think there's going to be a little bit more looking into this, and then probably the next thing would be to look at the onside kick and whether or not there's a scrimmage alternative. So again, we'll see what happens with that. Let's throw it over to Mark right now.
Well, if you didn't notice the chain gang coming out on the field to make measurements for first downs this year, that's because there was a digital measurement for first downs. With all the technology they have with cameras and angles and spotting, that they were able to electronically measure to see if the ball reached the line to gain. It was a very interesting technology. The couple of times that it was illustrated on the games I was watching on TV, and it was very smooth. There was really no issues involved with it. The chain gang is still going to stay on the sidelines. The chain gang is going to stay there so the officials can eyeball whether it's a first down or not. And the chain gang will be there in case there's some type of technology failure. I think it's so smooth because, number one, the technology is there to make it work. And number two, officials over the years have decided to start a first down on a yard line. If they start a first down on the 26 going out, they need to know you need to make it to the 36. And if the spot is at the 36-yard line, first down, we're going again, or the 37, or the 40, or the 42. And that's philosophy of trying to spot a first down always on a yard line, if possible, has made measurements a lot easier and a lot more rare these days. In fact, on my high school crew, for the past two seasons, we have not called for the chains once.
And when it runs on a major stripe, you're in good shape. And then, you know, occasionally, if you're in between 5 yard stripes and the dead ball is in the side zone, you know, then it does come into play in the NFL where they'll trot out the virtual measurement because you don't have that visual look there. And the chains will never go away because you still need that visible landmark in the actual game. Watching on TV, yeah, you got a yellow stripe, which we saw in the Super Bowl was not official when it was off by 1 yard on one down. But yeah, you still need to have that visual measurement. So the chain crew will always be there. And on top of that, they are also providing some support to the sideline, to the wing officials there, particularly when we're getting down to the 2 minute warning or the expiration of the quarter or any other issues that they might see that, you know, just give them a little heads up. So one thing I wanted to mention, since we're speaking of sidelines, I had a rant earlier in the season, and since we're in rules making territory, once we close out this podcast, the one thing that really jumped out at me was sideline warnings or interference on the sideline. And basically, it's a coach or a player that's in that 5 foot lane that the officials work on going laterally up the field. We found out that has been removed as a foul against an official. So in technical senses, that just kind of puts it in a bucket where it never gets declined. Now it's considered a live ball foul. So now you have a spot and now, you know, an enforcement in between the down and the potential for it to be declined. And when you do that, it takes away the importance of that foul, because it's not just, oh, you got in the way. It is actually a very serious situation, because you could have an official that is running full speed, watching out onto the field, not watching where they're going, and slam into somebody on that sideline who's got heavy padding or whatever, or injure both people. So it could be a catastrophic injury, and to bring it down to a live ball foul really starts to minimize the impact of the seriousness of that foul. It's not just getting in the way. It is, you could actually unintentionally cause some serious injury. Let's move it around, and we'll send it over to Pat and see what he's got to say.
Yeah, we've mentioned it a couple times in the past few weeks, but for me, a big recurring theme throughout the playoffs for the officials has kind of been a changing of the guard. We've really seen some of the younger referees get some big assignments. And, you know, in the past few years, you could pencil in Bill Vinovich or Carl Cheffers for conference championship or beyond. And Carl Cheffers had divisional round and Bill Vinovich was not on the field at all. And we had two officials in the conference championship, and Alex Kemp and Clay Martin get their first big assignments. And Sean Smith not only had the Super Bowl, he also had game one and game 272 as the white hat. So it's very clear to see where the NFL sees him. And along with those three, you could put in Sean Hockley in there, as names to watch going forward for your deep playoff games, Super Bowls, and what have you.
And it's not any mistake that those four officials that you mentioned, and it's Super Bowl, two conference championships, the divisional playoff, you know, the top four assignments right there. Plus, you know, you have John Smith working a second game, being the divisional. So you have, you know, six games there that are run by the, as we were saying, the class of 2017. And I'm going to make sure that I've got that year correctly. But those were that was the year that they were elevated to white hat, all four of them together. And, you know, that was, you know, kind of a changing right there, because we had an exodus of white hats, very experienced white hats. Gene Steratore, we had Terry McCauley leaving as well. So TV really pulling in a lot of talent at that particular time. And they recovered within, you know, that amount of time. You know, here we have them in the top games of the season. Let me throw it over to Cam, and you'll get the final quick take of the season here.
Yeah, it's something that maybe if we turn our dials back to the first game of the year, something that we thought, oh, you know, is this going to be a story? And I'm talking about ejections. We had the least number of ejections in a season in 10 years, actually, the lowest number since 2015. We had 11 total ejections. This is counted and kept track of by our partner site, Quirky Research, regular season and postseason ejections. We had 11 this year, lowest since 2015. But the funny thing is, like, I had that call back to week one. The first ejection of the year was took place before the first play from scrimmage even snapped. If we remember Spitgate, it feels like so long ago now that we're in February. Jalen Carter and Dak Prescott, this whole Spitgate incident where Carter was ejected. Sean Smith's crew was on that game, as we were just discussing. Something we thought maybe, oh, you know, is this going to be a season where obviously that was a kind of a boneheaded act, but, you know, right away, kicking off the season with an ejection, you think, oh, you know, usually we see between 15 and 20 a year. But we didn't have that many. There was actually a really big gap this season. After that first one in week one, we didn't see another ejection until week nine. And then rounding out the second half of the season, the rest kind of trickled into place. But, you know, it's really good to see that players are playing more disciplined. Hopefully this means coaching is improving. And a lot of times you'll have these circumstances where players will let their heads get the best of them, and it really hurts their team. I always like to say that when I officiate, when, you know, it's getting chippy, I always like to let players know you don't want to hurt your team by doing something that's individually making you bothered. But yeah, this is the lowest number we've seen in a decade, and hopefully it's continuing to trend downward.
From there, we take a look at the ejections that were called during the season, and now we look at the final game of the season. So we'll kind of pick apart the Super Bowl. There's not very much to talk about, which is, I would say, a win for the officials. But the one that really stuck out for most of us was the punch that landed. And everything that we say, it's got to be closed fist, it's got to land, it's got to be in front of the official, it's got to be seen. All of these elements seem to be there, but yet there was no flag, there was no ejection. So take us to the field level. What happened here? How did this break down? I'll start with you, Mark.
Well, the fracas started, the disagreement began, and there was some pawing at each other and shoving and face mask grabbing, and side judge Eugene Hall came upon the scene. I thought I saw him reaching toward his belt to pull a flag out, but he did not. He got in there, and he was in the middle of the scrum. And from a huge scrum that I was in the middle of earlier this season, you don't have the panoramic view of who did what to whom. You've got pads, you've got jerseys, you've got helmets, you've got arms. And your arms are in there trying to push people apart, using your voice, saying, "That's enough, stop it, stop it, stop it." And that's what Eugene Hall was doing. And he may have not seen that punch. You're thinking, come on, he's 8 inches away from the person throwing the punch. Why didn't he see it? Well, when you're being jostled in there and you're being pinballed around between a couple of players, it's hard to break it down. And you're at a point of, was that a punch or was that a shove? I'm not sure. And if you're not sure, you don't flag it. What could have helped Hall would have been if some officials on the periphery had seen it and they say, aha, that was a punch. And those two deserve unnecessary roughness. And there was a punch. And we're going to settle this now. And I'm going to drop a flag.
We had the breakdown online by John Boy, always a good breakdown wherever there's something, and helped us see what was said there. And of course, Mike Vrabel is saying, you know, wake the fuck up. And that's and we finally broke it right there. And that's the thing. It's not a matter of you're not paying attention. It's a matter of, you know, proximity. And I think we've covered this pretty well. Sometimes too close is too close. It's not better.
Very much so. And again, that's when the crew really needs to work together and eyes need to focus not only in the middle of the two combatants, but on the periphery, looking in with the panoramic view, because many times the official further away from the main action has the better look. So it's a bit of a shame there should have been an ejection last night, but not the worst thing in the world.
And to keep people in the Super Bowl, even though, yes, this was one that we see as a hard line, the fact that somebody stayed in the Super Bowl and replay was powerless because there was no flag on the field. And that's maybe something that they might look at in the offseason. But again, I mean, it's one thing for it to happen in the Super Bowl, but when there are 10 games going on at the same time, they're not going to be able to sift through everything and to enforce it in an equitable way from game to game. When there's only one game on and millions, hundreds of millions are watching it, you know, you can't use the same standard in those cases. There were some good calls. There were some good no calls. There were some tight calls. What else did we see in the Super Bowl there?
Want to give a shout out to third-year field judge Jason Lede. I think had one of the calls of the game in not making a call. So a really good decision to pass on a call. We didn't cover it in the live blog, but after taking a look at some replays from the game, you know, it was a call that I am really happy that he passed on in a circumstance. It was around, it was actually within the first minute of the fourth quarter. Seattle's driving, they're up 12, and Sam Darnold throws a pass to Cooper Kupp inside the 5-yard line, a pass deep right in Lede's lap. And, you know, there's a little bit of contact that we see from Craig Woodson, who is the defensive back of the Patriots, but he decides not to throw a flag for DPI. And it looked like Kupp got turned around and was kind of reaching back for the ball as a result of the contact. But once NBC kind of showed a nice ISO shot on it, Woodson really didn't make any contact at all until the ball arrived. And even when the ball arrived, the contact was minimal. You know, it's really great to see, especially these younger officials, as we've seen now in the past 2 years, younger in terms of tenure, they're getting these bigger assignments that were basically unheard of before. And it's always good to see that the judgment of a good official is going to put them in these high level games, regardless of how many years they've been in the league. So props to Lede on this no call, really strong one that stuck out to me.
I think kind of piggybacking on that with the less tenured officials, Ramon George has made it very clear in the past couple of years since he's taken over that the best officials are going to get the biggest games. And it doesn't matter if you're a 10-year official or if it's in your third or fourth year. If you've proven on the field that you're one of the best officials, you're going to get, you're going to be deep in the playoffs. Simple as that.
And the other thing too is, you know, we kind of noticed this early in the playoffs where all of the sort of deep wing back judge officials, you know, they had a line where we didn't see a lot of flags early because there weren't restrictions, right? And then when teams got tired and when teams got desperate, they started hitting the restrictions. And I thought the defensive play in that Super Bowl of the cornerbacks, the safeties and whatnot, their ability to not foul and still defend really well was remarkable. And the officials had to make those judgments, like Cam said, where is there a material restriction? Is there something going on? And everyone that Ramon George has assigned to these games has been on the same sort of page when it comes to those calls, I think. And, you know, college, we saw it a little bit, but there was a lot of restrictions sort of in that national championship game that weren't called. But again, I think going forward, he has clearly laid out how he wants these sort of pass interference, holding, secondary sort of defensive calls to be called. And he's going to reward those that do it correctly with these assignments.
I also just want to add very quickly that this is, I don't have the numbers in front of me throughout the whole season, but when you have these two defensive minded head coaches, you know, it speaks a lot to good coaching as well. So, you know, we always like to give the officials a lot of credit, but I'll do the same thing for the coaching. If you have these really good defensive plays and you have a low amount of fouls in the defensive secondary, it kind of speaks to, you know, the philosophy, especially when you look at these two head coaches from the Super Bowl, very defensive minded. And that always helps. If it stops with the coaching, if it stops there, I mean, then we don't have to get involved, which is always a plus.
And when it comes down to it, it's, yeah, we're in the Super Bowl. We're looking at, or it's same thing with the national championship game. You're there. Every little mistake is magnified. So players are going to be a little more conservative and try and make sure that they feel out where their limits are. You know, there may be some talk to moments mixed in there. And so, you know, it's keeping the game running. And in fact, you know, we have the first half. I mean, you know, we had a false start. That was academic, and that's all we had in the first half. So staying out of the way of the game, not calling something that looks like it's there, calling something that is there. Then we get into the second half. There was a IBW, a block in the back on a punt return. I mean, it was clear as day. We didn't even write it up because it was just so clear. In fact, they had already rolled the video of it prior to the announcement, so that once the announcement came forth, everybody was, we all know we're ahead of you on that one. And, you know, then we got into the fourth quarter. Then we started to see some holds, one that negated a Seahawks touchdown. But again, it was there. And you know, it wasn't any of these situations where it's like, you know, well, yeah, that could have gone either way. So that, again, yes, it's the coaching, it's the players, it is the officials that are there, not inserting themselves into the game, as people like to say. When they're needed to jump in, they will, and then by the time we got to the fourth quarter, and you have a team that is trailing by a lot, and now trying to now push the envelope a little bit, and even it's on both sides. It's now the defense has to adjust to an offense that is desperate. And so then, yes, you might see some fouls come out that way. And again, it's preventative officiating as well. If you want to kind of address that, where you have, you know, final game of the season, I mean, the tensions are really high. I know some of you have worked some of these games, at the high school level. You know, it's the end of the season and, you know, it's kind of getting a little chippy, or might start to get a little chippy. You know, take us to the field and tell us what you see in those situations.
In those moments when the team behind is feeling the game starting to slip away, they start to push the envelope, not maliciously or trying to start fights or have frustrations, but the corner says, I've got to get an interception. We've got to get something going here. We've got to stem the tide. We got to turn something around and turn it around quick. Well, here comes a pass to my receiver. I know where the line is, but let's see if I can get away with one. And let me play through him. Or let me cut his route off and try and get the interception. Or, you know, we need this first down to get into field goal range. And we haven't had any good luck as far as the run goes. We need 7 yards. Let's, you know, if my guy's about ready to get past me to sack the quarterback, I'm going to give a jersey tug. Or if it's 3rd and 2 and a run is called, I'm going to try and get some leverage and get my arms outside of the frame and move him out of the way. You press at that point, and that's when the officials have to be vigilant.
And with that, we wrap up 17 seasons with Football Zebras, our second on the podcast. This has been quite an experience for me. I've always learned something. I'll give my Podcaster of the Year award to Pat. Some of the insights that you've given this year have been fantastic. I urge anyone who has not heard the Thanksgiving episode, go back to that. Everybody was like really great. That was one of my favorites right there, where we talked about all of the Thanksgiving traditions, and it was certainly one to replay again and again. So if you have heard it, play it again. It's pretty good. I want to give a shout out to Chris Soibert, the podcast producer extraordinaire, who edits on time and gets me going to make sure we get our noon deadline on Tuesday. And of course, Mark Schultz, my trusty umpire, and Cam Philippe, my wingman, who's also reminding me of stats from time to time. And where I said the class of 2017, it was actually the class of 2018. So we can rewind that and fix that maybe some other time. But with that, I thank you very much for listening. For Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Pat Weber, Chris Soibert, I'm Ben Ostro. It's been fun. We'll catch you in September. Thanks for listening.